CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "The mind, once expanded to the dimensions of larger ideas, never returns to its original size." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers whose minds have been expanded to larger ideas. Our first Playmakers company's share price increased 70% after they became a real estate investment trust. Well, our next playmaker was the first man ever to break 50 seconds in the 100-meter freestyle in the 1976 Montreal Olympic Games. With us today is a CEO who won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur Award in 2014. Well, our next guest has a summer league swim team for children and has developed a master swim concept for adults. These great playmakers are Gary Wotasik. Gary is president and CEO of Cyrus One, and Jim Montgomery. Jim is founder of Jim Montgomery Swim School and Dallas Aquatic Masters, and we'll begin today's show with Jim. Jim Montgomery, an Olympic gold medalist and the founder and owner of Dallas Aquatic Masters Swim Club, was the first man ever to break 50 seconds in the 100-meter freestyle in the 1976 Montreal Olympic Games. Breaking this barrier was equivalent to Roger Bannister's breaking the 4-minute mile in track. Jim won two more golds and a bronze in the 1976 Olympics and won a record 5 golds in the first World Championships at Belgrade in 1973 and repeated with 4 golds, a silver, and a bronze in 75 and 78. Now, after his retirement from college and USA Swimming, Jim went on to win 14 Masters World Championships from 1986 to 2002. Jim began competing in ocean races in the 1980s, and in 1986 won the 2.4-mile Waikiki Rough Water Swim. Jim also co-authored Mastering Swimming, Faster Swimming for the Masters Athlete, and developed the Master Swim Concept for Adults. Jim, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Playmaker being a sports term, we have a real playmaker here in the studio. Now, you grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, which isn't really the warmest spot in the U.S. all year. So how did you become interested in swimming?
Well, I started with a little country club team when I was like 7 years old. And then after a couple of years, I went down to the downtown Madison YMCA, just a little basement pool, 5 lanes, 20 yards, and just worked out in the wintertime. Just because my mom wanted me to get down there and get rid of all this energy I had. So I really didn't start my true competitive swim career until I was 14.
Well, let's go back and understand that you were relatively unmotivated as a child, and you had a swim coach that got you going. Is that correct?
That's what happened. When I was 14, I was kind of swimming in one of the outside lanes, where, you know, the swimmers weren't as good as the inside lanes. They weren't working hard enough. And one day, my age group coach pulled me out of the water, grabbed my little finger, and said, "Jim, you got more potential in your little pinky than the rest of the pool combined if you would just use it." So that's when the lightning bolt kind of hit me, and he convinced me to drop all my other sports. And he said, "You know, if you can just concentrate on swimming, you can be really good."
Well, that was a whack in the side of the head for you in terms of saying that, and which brings me to the next question. We talked about this before the show started. What really is the difference between natural ability versus becoming an Olympic gold medalist?
Well, you can have that natural ability, and there were swimmers that are actually more talented than I was. But what I thought I did on a consistent basis is that I outworked them. And you know, I always had in my mind that I just didn't want to have good practices. I want to have great practices. So with that consistency, that really helped. And then I really developed really the concentration in practice and in the swim meets. Yeah, when I showed up at a practice, I wanted to do something, one thing really, really well, or I was wasting my time.
And you figured that out and went after it. One of the things I work with people on when I'm working with clients is that slight edge, and that was your slight edge coming to a practice, because I'm guessing that most of the other athletes that were practicing didn't do that.
Yeah, it was to me, it was like the two C's, concentration and confidence.
I saw on your website, I believe it was your website, concentration plus confidence plus attention to details equals excellence.
That's exactly right.
Do you preach that to your swimmers?
Every day.
Well, that's, again, I'm a big believer in the fact you don't have to be talented in almost anything to be successful if you have that right attitude.
That's
focus
it.
On excellence.
You know, and confidence is just built one little step at a time, one practice at a time. So when I got up on the starting blocks, I had the attitude that I was in the best condition of everybody here, and I worked harder than anybody there, so I deserved to win.
Well, one of the things I work with salespeople on, is equivalent to sports too, is confidence is entering a contest and wondering who's going to come in second.
That's right. Nobody remembers second.
That's right. You only remember first. So how did you make the transition from athlete? We talked about that too, from winning Olympic medals and other medals you won along the way to becoming a business person.
Well, there was a void after all the accolades died down from my swimming career. A lot of athletes at that stage go, well, what's next? What can I do to, you know, get my name out there and have a business career? And it was just kind of like one night I thought, well, I've got a business degree from Indiana. I'm a pretty good coach. You know, why don't I start a master swim team? This was in 1981. And what I did is I put up a sign at the SMU outdoor pool and said, I'm going to start a master swim team. And that's exactly what happened. As the first night, seven people, terrified people, showed up. And I went through a workout with them. And from there, all of a sudden, 30 people started showing up. And then 3 months later, 150 people were swimming. And a couple of years down the road, 400 people were swimming.
And all of a sudden, you had a business.
So I started it as a hobby. And then all of a sudden, I said, what do you know? What do you know? I think this is kind of a business.
Well, you grew up in Madison. You went to school in Indiana. What brought you to Dallas?
I get that question all the time. Basically, after Indiana, I moved back to my hometown, Madison, Wisconsin, and it was the coldest winter in history, 1979, and I was walking back with my brother one night, and he stopped me to tell me something. I think the weather was about 60 below that night, so I was interviewing for a job, and the next morning, I called up the Hyatt Hotel people, which were based in Chicago, and said, you know, send me to either Florida, Texas, or Southern California. And they said, well, you know, you get to choose. So I said, well, I'll head straight for Texas. So 3 days later, my U-Haul was packed, and I headed for Dallas.
And then the rest is history. So you've been an Olympic athlete. You're a business person. Where does your passion lie now?
Well, my passion lies with teaching kids water safety and preventing drownings. I started my own Jim Montgomery Swim School this January up in North Dallas. And right now we're approaching like 500 families. And a lot of them are kids that are just learning how to swim.
Well, let's talk about that a little further. I believe you have a summer league swim team. There's one has started, but you have two more sessions that are coming up, 6 week sessions coming up later in the year.
Yeah, they've got I'm going to start with a little summer league team, just like I did when I was 7 years old, for kids that have never competed, very low key. So I'm going to have a lot of fun watching 5, 6, and 7 year olds swim down the pool.
What about adults? What do you do with the adults then?
The adult thing is there's a lot of adults that just kind of lack confidence in their swim skills. And what I did is basically provide a one-hour coach practice where we teach them the proper stroke mechanics, and we give them a workout that is geared to their skill level. And a lot of successful people come out, and they just want to be coached for that 1 hour, and that's what we do.
Well, you've done a lot within Dallas besides having your businesses. You did a lot with, I believe it's Green Hill, and you also worked with Baylor. Tell us what you've done with them in developing the swim programs.
Well, Baylor approached me in 1988 when they came on the pool deck and saw I had like about 400 or 500 swimmers, and they said, we're building this Baylor Tom Landry Center downtown, and we'd like you to jump on board and create the facility of your dreams and have you come in and bring your group in there. And that's basically what happened is Baylor built the Baylor Aquatic Center, specifically really because of my adult fitness swim program. And I came in and managed and directed that for about 9 years with Baylor. And then I broke off and we started our own master swim club. But we still train and have a practice down at Baylor.
Well, you let's go back to your Olympic years. We're talking about working out. What's it like to train as an Olympic athlete? Now, we were talking ahead of time about the difference between swimmers these days in the Olympics and back in the 70s. But what was it like for you to train? What did you do on a daily basis?
In the summertime, the training, you get up at 6:30 in the morning. You go over and you train, do a 2 hour and maybe 15 minute session. You could be going anywhere from 7 to 9,000 meters during that time. You come back, you eat a huge breakfast. I probably would rest for a couple hours, get up and eat a big lunch. And then I usually had a summertime job up until I was like 17. And then you come back at 4 in the afternoon and do another session from 4 to 6 o'clock, another, you know, maybe 7,000 meters.
So you're almost living and breathing and swimming the whole time. Talk about how many calories you were consuming, because you were burning up a lot of calories, too.
I was probably consuming, you know, 10, 12,000 calories a day, and I couldn't keep my clothes on.
It must have been an awful lot of protein going through you, too.
There was a lot of, you know, I'd say the typical breakfast was like a dozen eggs, half a pound of bacon, half a quart of chocolate milk, 6 pieces of toast.
Oh, for the average person, they would love to have that and have that weight fall off too. But let's talk about the real reason why you were successful. One, it's working out. But the big part was that attitude. Talk about that as an Olympic athlete, but also talk about it as you work with your students, both kids and adults.
Well, my attitude comes if I'm going to show up and if they're going to show up and swim, I want them to concentrate on doing at least one thing really well. Otherwise, to me back then, it was a waste of my time. The other thing is I want them to be consistent, you know. And like I said, my attitude was is I didn't want to have good practices. I want to have great practices. So if I could string about 8 to 10 weeks of training together like that, just my confidence just absolutely soared.
So have you seen either, well, primarily children that could be future Jim Montgomerys?
Well, I've seen a couple of 4 and 5 year olds here in this week that are pretty good. And again, I wasn't, you know, I was a good athlete up until I was 14. But I didn't really become a great athlete until I focused 100% on that goal of winning Olympic gold. And you got to remember, 50 seconds, you know, it took me 7 years to train for that 50 seconds. So when I got up on the starting blocks, I had rehearsed that race in my mind thousands and thousands of times. I knew exactly what I was going to do every second of that race.
What was the, can you remember where you were and where you decided that Olympic medal was potential for you in the future?
Well, I think the success came when I was 14. Actually, the next year when I was 15, I won my first state championships. And I was thinking, you know, wow, I beat, you know, one of the best swimmers in the state in a race. You know, this is really exciting. I want to have more.
Well, there's probably a number of adults and parents that have kids would love to see their kids really develop the love for swimming. What are the websites they can go to find out more about your schools?
Our website, you know, is jmswim.com to get into the swimming school. You can go into the USA Swim site, which is tells you all the USA Swim clubs in the whole country and in the North Dallas area. And then as far as learning how to swim, there's United States Swim School Association. You can Google that and go into their website.
And where can they find out more information about your schools for the kids?
Well, the website, and then or they can just give us a call at the swim school.
And that number is on our website, which is PlaymakersTalkShow.com. Jim, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks for inviting me, Steve.
Don't go away, we have more. We're going to speak with the CEO of CyrusOne. His name is Gary Wotasik. Gary and I will be back right after this.
Wipe Out Kids Cancer is a Dallas-based nonprofit organization founded in 1980 dedicated to raising awareness and funding for pediatric cancer research on a national basis. Wipe Out Kids Cancer has raised over $4 million in the crusade against pediatric cancer and spent over 30 years developing programs to not only fight childhood cancer, but to also provide hope and support to kids and families battling cancer. Our mission is to work relentlessly for a day when children are living cancer-free. You can help make a difference. Go to WOKC.org to donate or volunteer. That's WOKC.org.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. This segment, we're going to speak with Gary Wotasik. Gary is currently the president and CEO of CyrusOne, a Dallas-based high-growth data center company that focuses on serving the needs of the Fortune 1000, including nine of the Fortune 20. Gary has led CyrusOne since 2011, and under his leadership has aggressively grown the company's revenues and profitability by expanding into new markets and product lines. After converting the company to a real estate investment trust in 2013, the company completed its initial public offering and its share price has increased by more than the 70% we said at the opening. It's now 270%, making it one of the best performing publicly traded REITs in the industry over the past 2 years. With all that, Gary, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you for being here. You're in the data center business. Why do companies now in the 21st century, 2016, need to use data centers like yours?
There's currently an amazing data revolution going on. So if you can think about anything in your home life, all those different devices that you and your children have that are connected to the internet all create data. That data ultimately gets stored on a computer that sits in a data center, and we're in the business of providing these specialized pieces of real estate to our customers.
Well, there's an interesting history to CyrusOne going back a few years. Give us a kind of the short version of the history of both yourself and the company that bought CyrusOne and created what it is today.
Sure. So CyrusOne was basically born out of Cincinnati Bell. So Cincinnati Bell is, you know, a 140-year-old standalone telephone company based in Cincinnati. It's actually the last of the remaining Bell companies out there. It has always been independent for 140 or so years. I was the CFO of Cincinnati Bell at the time and developed a strategy around how we should deploy our cash. Like a lot of phone companies, they generate a significant amount of cash flow, but the products are increasingly becoming irrelevant. And so my task was basically to figure out what to do with that cash flow. I figured out one of the opportunities that we had within our portfolio was a small data center business. We looked at the business, you know, saw the broad trends associated with the unbridled demand for data. We thought that that was not going to slow down. We thought that as data, you know, needs continue to explode.
And Cincinnati Bell was already successful in the data center business.
Oh, absolutely. It was very small at the time. We were about a $30 million EBITDA business at the time. And so we thought that eventually over time, as the data explosion was going to continue, that would force more of the Fortune 1000 companies that we were selling to outsource more of their data centers to us. And we developed a plan around that, threw some capital at it, and started growing it. And, you know, we've increased the size of the company, you know, almost tenfold over the last 7 or 8 years.
Now, Cincinnati Bell purchased CyrusOne, which was in Houston.
That's right.
You're now located here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But you have, I believe, 30 data centers.
Yeah, we actually have 30. We have 33 data centers around the country and two in London and Singapore. And these are just really large, specialized pieces of real estate that have an overabundance of, you know, redundancies built into it so that, you know, these systems can never go down electrically or from an air conditioning perspective. So we have multiple generators, backup battery systems, backup cooling systems, because what we're ultimately providing our customers is a peace of mind. So when they put their computers in our facilities, they can never go down, because as more and more things are being done over the internet, any downtime is very expensive. And, you know, just to give you an example, Alibaba this last year broke the record of, you know, selling $400 million in a minute. On the internet. So a minute of downtime is quite expensive to companies like that.
Can't be. Well, of those 33, you have 13 here in Texas, I believe. So my question is, do clients want to have that data center close to them? And is that why you have 33?
Yeah, it varies. Ultimately, clients make decisions on what data centers they're going to use, the location of those, based on the applications that they're going to deploy in those data centers. So some applications require a low latency, like a really quick user response experience. So those are going to be applications that are going to be placed closer to ultimately the customers that they're serving. You know, other applications that are less, you know, time sensitive can be placed in other parts of the country, predominantly areas where there's really low cost power available.
Well, your shares have gone up dramatically. And you have a number of data centers. What is really driving CyrusOne's current high growth rate?
Yeah, here's an interesting stat, and it all goes back to data. So if you take all of the data that exists in the world today, 90% of that was created in the last 2 years, and it's roughly equivalent to about 8 zettabytes of data.
A lot of data.
And a zettabyte is like 1 followed by 21 zeros, so a really big number. But to give you some context around it, if you think about it in the form of an iPad, and you take the iPads and you put them as panes of glass, one next to another, that amount of data that exists in the world today can go around the Earth 3,000 times, right? So really big amount of data available. Well, what's really amazing is that amount of data that exists in the world today is going to increase fivefold in the next 4 years. And so we are on the verge of just getting overwhelmed with the amount of data that's getting created, and data centers are just a much more efficient way to manage that data than historically they were being managed by enterprises individually.
Well, I mentioned at the beginning that you have 9 of the top 20 Fortune or the top 9 of the Fortune 20. We talked about this before the show started about one of the commitments that you make to your customers. Talk about what that is and why that's so important in building a business.
Yeah, we are fundamentally a technology company, a specialized real estate company in the technology industry. At our core, we deliver specialized pieces of real estate, and we can do that at a tremendous speed to market advantage at a lower cost than any of our customers can do for themselves. So we've been doing that historically, but we've always recognized since we started the company was that customer service was going to be the key differentiator long term, and so that is ultimately the reason why, you know, all the Fortune 500 companies choose us and continue to grow with us and tell their other colleagues at other companies about that. Because at the end of the day, no CIO has ever called me to thank me for how powerful our generators were or how clean our white floors were. What they've always said was, we really appreciate your commitment, your willingness to go the extra mile to really understand, you know, the concerns I have with trusting you with my mission critical gear. So we have been focusing on customer service since inception. We have been sending all of our employees to, you know, customer service training at the Ritz-Carlton or at Zappos or Walt Disney World. It's just leading world-class, you know, customer service organizations and as a way to kind of get that type of mindset in our company so that we can enhance the user experience for our customers.
We'll use the analogy of iPads next to each other going around the world 3,000 times. That has to do with the cloud. What is the cloud and where is it?
Well, we trademarked the phrase a couple years ago that CyrusOne is the sky for the clouds. So, the clouds are just, efficient ways to manage data and to make that data accessible anywhere, anytime you want, from wherever you want. So anytime you push any buttons on your wireless phone and it goes into some app and it runs in the background somewhere, all that happens ultimately in the data center. And so the clouds, you know, while from a virtual perspective, everyone thinks they're up in the sky, they terrestrially sit in the data center, and we have hundreds of clouds that reside in our facilities currently. Clouds are just really efficient ways to access data and give people the ability to get to that data, manipulate it, share it, you know, really, really easily.
Well, you mentioned that you have great customer service. You do a lot, spend a lot of money on your employees. What do you look for when you're looking for a new employee for CyrusOne?
You know, it's you know, number one is you want them to be passionate about what they do. You want them to be passionate, understand what it is that we do, want to be a team player and enjoy winning. And that's really, you know, the success of the whole company has been founded on the team. I have a fantastic team of individuals that we've been able to recruit to the party over the last, you know, decade or so. And everyone that they've recruited to the company has had that same mindset. And if you get a bunch of cool, interesting people that are motivated to win and enjoy working with one another, you can accomplish a lot in life.
Well, you've been spent a lot of time both in school and after school with after college, rather, with in the finance business, accounting, CFO, CEO. If you weren't CEO of CyrusOne, what would you be doing?
I would be a teacher. I would
teacher of what?
You know, I would teach economics and history class and entrepreneur classes. You know, I did that originally when I first got out of school. I taught English as a second language and GED math classes for GED. Enjoyed that immensely. I was doing that on a part-time basis, and so I've always told my wife once once this gig is over, I'm going to go back to being a teacher. I think I can share a lot of my experiences on the business side, but you know, I really enjoy history and economics.
I'm going to take a guess here then that your leadership style as a CEO is that of a teacher.
Yes, absolutely. I'm unbelievably collaborative. You know, I pull everyone into this. It's a very Socratic type of approach to attacking problems and making sure we're all in alignment in terms of making sure we agree on the path forward.
Well, we spoke earlier because you're from the Northeast. You spent some time in Europe. You were in Detroit. You were in Cincinnati, a few other places too. What's the biggest surprise about living in Dallas and Texas?
So I had been coming down to Texas, you know, both Houston and Dallas for a number of years, and you know, for 2 or 3 years. And what I didn't realize until I moved here was that this is the most entrepreneurial place I have ever worked at ever. It is so unique, and I think it has to go back to, you know, the way this, you know, the way this state was formed, really independent. And you know, you have a guy digging a hole, you know, and throwing all of his and his wife's family savings in a hole, hoping to score oil, and it doesn't happen, and it's, oh, shucks, let's go do it again. And that type of mentality has, like, infected the entire state. It is so cool. I mean, it's something that people, I don't think outside the state really appreciate. I didn't. And the other thing that was really cool here is, what a partner the government is to business, right? It's a real symbiotic relationship. They are sincerely trying to help you. You know, I've met more people. I just moved down here 3 years ago. I've met more people business-wise here than I've met anywhere in my life by a factor of 10. I mean, it's been an incredible place to live. I really like it. And you don't have to shovel the heat. So everyone's always apologetic about how hot it gets in Texas, but you don't have to shovel that heat. It's better than
live up north like we have for a while, and you'll know what it's like to live in Dallas.
Absolutely.
So tell everybody where they can find out more about CyrusOne.
Well, you can go to our website, CyrusOne.com.
Well, Gary, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Yep. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for
having me. Gary Otasek is president and CEO of CyrusOne. Our first guest was Jim Montgomery. Jim is the founder of Jim Montgomery Swim School and Dallas Aquatic Masters. This has been a terrific show. I'd like to thank our Playmakers. It's been great having everybody join us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com also, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting Playmakers.